Until today, Thomas King was a convicted felon, wanted for rape, arson, and murder. Here he is, just steps away from two of Detroit's finest. These two officers are completely unaware of the monster in their midst. And then, in 60 seconds, I repeat, just 60 seconds, Detective Murphy brings him down.
You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided for you.
This, my friends, is the future of American justice. How many like Thomas King will pay for their crimes now that RoboCop is here?
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm managing editor Matt Goldberg, and with me today is associate editor Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
And contributing writer Jason Barr.
Hey, guys.
Today we'll be talking about the remake of RoboCop, and then we will expand that to talk about other remakes, because RoboCop is the kind of film where it didn't really need a remake, but what is the necessity of any remake, and why remake certain films? Because already, what is the brand recognition of RoboCop? Is this a film that the name RoboCop will instantly appeal to a younger generation? Or is it just something that's going to get the cynics all riled up and say, why are you remaking this in the first place? But before we expand to that, Adam didn't get a chance to see it this weekend, but Jason, you did, and I know you're a big fan of RoboCop. So I posted my review. I had mixed feelings on the film. It was better than I thought it would be, and I would like to thank Len Wiseman for setting the bar low with his remake of Total Recall. And so at the very least, like, it's better than Total Recall. But and I think part of that is because it tries to at least tries to do something new, whereas like Total Recall is almost like a beat-for-beat remake and completely pointless. Except instead of going to Mars, they go through the center of the Earth, which is just so stupid.
That's a key change, Matt.
It is. They go. They get on the Earth elevator.
They were so coy about that too in the beginning. They were like, "Oh, you know, I don't know if we'll be going to Mars in this one." And everyone's like, "What? Like, what's the cool thing gonna be that they're doing instead of not going to Mars?" I'm like, "Oh, we're just gonna go through the middle of the Earth.
We're gonna go through the middle of the Earth, and he's gonna end up in Blade Runner.
Yeah, basically,
that's what's gonna happen." So, but that film came out years ago. Let's talk about the new bad idea to remake Verhoeven. But I did like that they're at least trying to do other things. It wasn't a beat-for-beat remake. But on the one hand, it also kind of repeats themes from the original and then tries to do new themes. But I guess my overall problem is that I don't feel anything in it is really developed to its fullest. But that's my review in a nutshell. Jason, what did you think?
Yeah, I think a lot of what you said, Matt, in your review, I agreed with. Like I wrote in the top five yesterday, I think the best thing I can say about it is something that you've already said, and that's that it does try and do its own thing. It tries to be its own film and kind of stand alone and on its own ideas and themes. And while it shares a lot of them with the original, in a lot of ways, it's very different. And so, you know, I applaud that, and I appreciated that about the movie, as opposed to it being, like you guys talked about, the Total Recall remake, which was kind of a shot-for-shot movie, and you wonder what's the purpose of this. So I did appreciate that. You know, it tries to update some of the social and political critique, I think, to be a little more relevant, a little more topical for today, with drones and robots being used in warfare and kind of overseas. It plays to the theme of you know, America kind of policing the world. And so I appreciated that, and I thought, for the most part, it did a pretty good job of that. I thought the scenes with Samuel L. Jackson as kind of this television Bill O'Reilly counterpart, essentially, he did a good job. It was entertaining. A lot of that kind of rang true. So,
by the way, what a great job for him, because he basically just got to stand on a soundstage for probably a few days, say his line, move his hands around to do futuristic graphics, and that was it. That is the extent of his role. He literally never leaves his little, like, you know, studio. He doesn't go out into the world, and almost no one interacts with him directly. It's hilarious.
It's a great gig for Sam Jackson, and
this is how Sam Jackson is able to do so many jobs, because he picks, he knows how to, like, get the roles that will, like, speed him along. Not to say that he, like, sleepwalks through his performances, but I think he consciously, like, moves quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. He gets dropped in, dropped out. Like, I don't know how long it took him to shoot this, but I imagine it could have been done in, like, 2 days, tops.
Yeah, and absolutely.
And so good for him for that. I guess those are the good things I can say about it, is that it does try to do its own thing. I'd say the biggest flaw in it is that I just think it was just boring. It wasn't fun. I didn't really think it took time to kind of laugh at the situation, and it wasn't absurd in any way like the original was. It didn't have any sort of heightened sense of violence. Not that gore and heightened violence is necessary, but I think when you compare this to the original, it's almost like Verhoeven has a sledgehammer and Padilla has a Q-tip, and that's what I wrote yesterday, and I kind of stand by that. It's just, it's so safe, it's so antiseptic, that it's just, I kind of got bored. So
yeah, I mean, it doesn't really, again, take anything to an extreme. Anything really, it's a soft landing. And even RoboCop, you're saying how he doesn't do any violence. He doesn't even really kill that many people. He has a stun gun in this, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't really have good antagonists. I wasn't necessarily bored, but I think that's because I thought the supporting performances were so good, especially from Oldman and Keaton. I think they kept it fun. Baruchel was good. Jackson was fun. And I like that Kinnaman has, like, a convincing everyman quality, but they didn't really give him that much. I think with what he had, he was fine, and he made the role his own. Simply because, although, honestly, that was kind of easy because this role is drastically different than the one in the Verhoeven version.
Yes,
so, but you're right. It's not funny. And at the same time, it's not really an action spectacle. If you were to break it down, there's really not that many action scenes in the film.
Yeah, it's just, I felt like we spent too much time developing the Murphy and then Gary Oldman, Dennett Norris, I think, or Dennett Norton, I guess, is his character's name. We spent so much time developing kind of their relationship and the actual science behind creating RoboCop that there wasn't enough time for him to go out and kick ass, you know, and enforce law, which is what RoboCop, I would assume, is intended to do. It's just a whole lot of him kind of in a prototype stage, and it kind of lulled me a little bit. It lulled me to sleep. Not literally. I did not fall asleep, although I did yawn.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're trying to sort of use him as, like, this Swiss Army knife to address a bunch of points. And to his credit, at Comic-Con, Jose Padilla specifically mentioned, like, drone warfare. And sometimes at Comic-Con, like, they mention something they want, and it turns out to be utter bullshit. They're like, oh, no, the film will do this. And it's so not true. It's just such bull. It's such a stretch, and it's so pretentious. But he did follow through on it in the sense of the thing that he said at Comic-Con was part of his movie, but it was never taken to an extreme. And even the emotional stuff, the stuff with his family, is cursory, and it's done about as well, even though there's more of it, as it's done in the original. And what does the original do? The original says, it basically conveys his entire past life with the way that he spins a gun. Like,
yeah.
All of that is just contained in that one motion.
I completely agree. Yeah, I cared more about 1987 RoboCop's family, and they're on the screen for what, a total of a minute and a half, 2 minutes?
They're in flashbacks
is all they exist in, and I cared more about that family dynamic than I did this dynamic, which was a pretty decent chunk of the film, although he and his son spend about 45 seconds together and talk about the Red
his
Wings.
His son taped the Red Wings game,
Red
damn
Wings,
it.
And then it's like, oh, big gulp, say, well, see you later.
hold on, son, I have to go check on the car. Boom.
You know, so, I don't know. I got what they were trying to do, and I I guess I could appreciate that they were trying to create an emotional tie to his wife, especially Abby Cornish, who I think is kind of woefully underused in this film. I think the stuff that she's given, I think she's a pretty good actress, but I think the stuff she's given in this is just...
Here she is, grieving wife. That is her job in this film, grief wife.
That's it. But I will agree with one thing you said, Matt. I think Keaton and Oldman are both really good. I liked both of their roles a lot. I think Oldman is a great kind of emotional foundation of the movie, and Keaton is pretty good as a sleazy CEO who's just kind of out to make a profit. So those two, I think, are real high points of the film.
Now, Adam, have you seen the original RoboCop?
I have, but it's been years. It was a long time ago. But I did. I was curious as to how they dealt with RoboCop in this movie, because I have a feeling, like, in this studio climate, they wouldn't, like, let the RoboCop just be more robot than human. Is this a more, like, kind of humanoid
RoboCop?
Oh, this
RoboCop is definitely a more human, emotional RoboCop.
Like, yes.
Yeah, because... I assumed the studio wouldn't just be like, all right, we trust you to, you know, make a movie about a robot. Nope.
Although, in some ways, it's more, like, there's so much easing up on the... There's not a lot of blood, but, like, there's a lot of shooting, and there's not a lot of killing, and yet it is kind of violent, but there's this one scene in particular that for... This is a PG-13 film, and it's sort of, without going into detail, revealing how the RoboCop suit works in tandem of... You know, he gets injured, for those who don't know. He has become RoboCop because...
Spoiler alert.
In the trailers, he is attacked. He has a car bomb, and he's almost killed. And Robo, you know, basically the suit is a giant... Is an iron lung that can kill people. That's basically what it is. The world's best iron lung. And they show, you know, how it's working. And it's grotesque. It's a really gross scene. And in some ways, it's kind of on par with the scene in the original RoboCop where they're talking about how it's all done in the POV where his brain is still kind of working and processing it. So we're all seeing it through his, like, computer brain. And the sort of mean, just mean-spirited asshole Omnicorp guy played by Miguel Ferrer, they tell him that Murphy's arm is still there, and he's like, lose it. I don't want anything human on this guy, which is, like, horrifying. And yet in this one, it's still kind of, they have a scene that I thought was still pretty shocking. Jason, I assume you know the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. I think it definitely kind of pushes the boundary of the rating. That scene, I think, to something that you asked about, Adam, is he more man or machine? In this, and how do they treat that? And I think, actually, I can say that I liked the way that they treated the man versus machine dynamic in this remake. I thought some of the stuff that they did, where I don't think I'm going to spoil the movie for anybody when I say that whenever RoboCop is first being developed, they're trying to retain human elements of Murphy, partially so that the general populace will accept him as the new law enforcement. So they're trying
because
to make
in
him.
This, yeah, and in this version, I'm sorry, no, I just to make it clear to people, in this version, they do have humanoid robots called ED-208s, which they didn't have in the original, and that's a key difference because they are basically walking drones, but they don't have a human face. So Jason, continue, though. I just want to make that clear.
No, that's a good point. Good setup, Matt. So they're trying to make him as human as he can possibly be while still being highly productive, which is the whole point of the robot. But there's some good things I think the film does where it shows that he can't be as effective, he can't be as efficient as these drones are, as these ED-208s are. And so there's some split screen scenes where he's going through these same training scenarios as the ED-208s, and the ED-208s are just slashing him. I mean, he's not nearly as efficient as they are. And so I think the film actually does a really good job of that, showing that they try and make him human, and then they realize he's not nearly as efficient as he needs to be. And so from there, they try and take away human elements slowly but surely so that he eventually just becomes, you know, more machine than man. But anyway, I think the film shows that pretty well.
So, you know, I had a bit of a problem with that, and I think you've made it sort of easier for me to articulate, which is they want RoboCop basically as a PR move to help get this bill repealed that prevents drones being used on U.S. soil. They can be used overseas. And by drones, I mean the Omnicorp products, the ED-209s, 208s, and RoboCop, which is the prototype. And what this is a PR move. And so for me, it's like Omnicorp doesn't really care that much about proper law enforcement. And I find it a little harder to believe that they're like, oh, well, if Murphy's like 2 seconds slower than our robot, like no one's going to know or care like all that much. Like, I think they do. They are kind of later in the film, they are technically forced to make a change. But some of the changes they care about don't make a lot of sense because it feels like first and foremost, he is a PR stunt. Like, he is basically just a face on the robot they already have.
Yep. I'll agree with you, Matt. That's exactly what he is. They're basically just using him as a figure that the general populace can get behind with the hopes of eventually, I think, you know, the goal is to repeal the act altogether and go full robot. But I think it's they see RoboCop as kind of a instead of diving in, he's kind of like dipping the toe in the pool to get people comfortable with these robots basically enforcing the law.
Yeah, he's kind of a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
And a Trojan horse and a way to circumvent the law that is in place.
Yep.
Which is, again, it's kind of a clever thing. It's like he's supposed to enforce the law, but he's circumventing the law. Like, you have all these sort of loose threads, like, waiting to be developed, and just none of them come to fruition. And I think that makes it a very frustrating film.
Yeah. I'll say, too, while we're talking about kind of his development as a prototype, as a machine, I really liked Jackie O'Haley in this film as kind of the senior warfare. I don't know what his title was. His character is Rick Maddox, but he's kind of OCP's head warfare gentleman.
He's basically the guy that's like, I like my robots without people in them.
Basically, he's the guy that's basically there saying, my robots kick ass, they're awesome, they're super efficient, and there's no way that this jerk in a suit's gonna top it. And I kind of like the role that he plays throughout the film. So I like Jackie Earle Haley anyway, so maybe I'm more inclined to like the performance, but I thought his character was pretty good.
So let me turn the conversation to this question. We agree that the film had potential, but it didn't follow through. Assuming that it had, would a RoboCop remake have been worthwhile, keeping in mind that the original is a classic and has elements that could never be done today? You can't. The films, this and Total Recall, the films that Paul Verhoeven got away with in the 80s, and I mean, Total Recall came out in 1990, but I still consider it an 80s film, that are incredibly violent, hard R, box office success films. Like, you couldn't make those today. And so RoboCop is, the original is a film that you couldn't remake anyway for what it was. And I think that's kind of a good thing. And yet, it is classic. So how much can you depart if you can't improve? And if you can't do it right, should you have done it at all? And even if you can, let's go from that. So yes, if this had been a success, if this had worked, should we have just bite our tongues and like, yes, RoboCop and maybe other films, we should open up the floor to that? Because again, it seems like the trouble is not based on should we or shouldn't we, it's just we shouldn't because in this case it wasn't a success.
Yeah, I think, and I don't know if this is directly answers in your question, Matt, but I think from my end, I try and go into these remakes open-minded every time. It becomes difficult because, you know, we talk about Total Recall, and you can go down the list of remakes that kind of flop or fail to maybe live up to the source material. But I try and go into every one of them open-minded and without the feeling that this isn't necessary, I'm not going to see it. And the reason I try and do that is because, of course, it's not necessary. Of course, it's not something that we have to have. If it was, are any films necessary? Are any films, do we have to have them? I mean, I think that kind of voids out a majority of what gets made if you go in with that, you know, that idea. So I try and go in open-minded to all of these. And I think if the film had lived up to some of the ideas that it sets up and some of the things that it has going for it, if it would have followed through on those and not, as you said earlier, kind of fallen flat, then I think by all means, if it's successful in that regard, then at that point it becomes necessary by virtue of its own success and by virtue of its own credentials, because it was successful in living up to those ideas. So I don't think any remake is necessary, or any film for that matter. But if it had
from been, a hunter gatherer standpoint,
yeah, had it followed through with the things that it had set in place and had been a more poignant film, I think I'd be the first one to say, go check this movie out. It's a great compliment to the original. But I don't feel like I can say that about this one.
Adam, what are your thoughts on sort of remaking films?
Well, I think, to me, the approach to remakes, I feel, is the same way I feel about adaptations, which is that a slavish, or, you know, kind of like a very kind of revelatory remake or adaptation adds nothing to the conversation. Like, that film exists. That original RoboCop exists. You cannot make that again. So take the central premise and do something new, do something different, because you're not going to recapture what that did. There's no point in, I mean, yeah, we get it. Peter Jackson loves King Kong, but just because you give it more special effects doesn't make it a better movie. Like, the original exists. I think you should, and this probably aren't the best examples, but something like the Evil Dead remake, where you take the central premise but you do something different. Now, that wasn't a perfect movie by any means, but I think that's the way to approach them, because, I mean, again, that original exists. You can go see that. So there's no point in just kind of like, all right, we're going to have another actor play the same character and do the same story again. Like, why? And like, another remake that I surprisingly enjoyed was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, because it, again, was just something really different. I mean, it wasn't a great film. It doesn't stand up to the original, but it at least it wasn't just kind of copying, you know, beat for beat what the original was, which I think just becomes pointless. I mean, again, that movie exists, so do something different and interesting. I think even Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes remake, that's not a really good movie, but I think it had the right idea in that you have to move away from the original. You have to move away from that source material and do your own thing. If you keep trying to add in, like, winks to the original or nods to the original and kind of, I mean, even, I think it only hurts films if you acknowledge that the original exists within the context of that film, where you have, you know, what, I think the original suit is in this new RoboCop. I don't know how that went over.
Well, they use it as sort of like, yeah, there is sort of a winking reference to it. Yes.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I get it. There are fans of that film in there, but that only serves to remind you that there's, you know, a really
great... you're watching a movie.
Yeah, there's a really great original out there that exists. So, you know, my take on it is that I like it when you do something different, because... But, I mean, obviously that's not the studio standpoint, because they're just, you know, just throw a bunch of money at it. That one worked. Why, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But yeah, then you turn into, like, Gus Van Sant territory, where you, I mean, that's a really good experiment of, like, all right, let's shoot the exact same script of Psycho and do it now. Like, what does that look like? I think Gus Van Sant knew exactly what he was doing. He was just saying, you know, nope, this does not work.
Yeah, although, you know what, though? I mean, I ripped into Delivery Man last year, and people kind of was like, well, why aren't you reviewing the actual movie? I'm like, well, first off, I'm like Jason. I mean, I want to not carry in those expectations. I didn't want to necessarily judge this RoboCop by the standards of the previous RoboCop. I wanted to judge this film on its own merits. And I feel like, for the most part, I did. But at the same time, this film only exists as any adaptation. It only exists because the source material exists. So why are we pretending that it existed in a vacuum?
Yeah, like, that's a great point. They do not exist in a vacuum. Without the original, the remake does not exist. And so I think you make a good point, Matt.
Now, if I'm working from a place of ignorance, so be it. You know, I don't read the book of every movie before I see it. I don't necessarily see the original of every remake I see, but I try. And with Delivery Man, it was so frustrating because it was basically a shot-for-shot remake of his own movie, but with just different actors and different words, and coincidentally, Vince Vaughn. So Psycho and Delivery Man, Vince Vaughn does not mind going the exact same territory that someone else has gone. He is down with that.
But what do you think about remake culture, though, Matt? Like, do you think that it's better to do something completely different? Do you think that you should adhere to certain aspects of the original?
Well, obviously, I would like more original things, period, but that's not a reality. Here's the reality. I would say, I agree with you, these remakes could kind of basically be viewed as adaptations. And my feeling is, every film is, to say, is it necessary, is, yes, every film is unnecessary, but I feel that, necessary to whom? That's the idea. And it's unnecessary if you're a fan of the original. Like, oh, you already did it right. Why try again? But maybe there's someone out there. In fact, there probably has to be. Someone who goes out and is inspired by the remake of RoboCop. Like, something in this film, like, just hooks them. And they're like, I want to learn more about, you know, the relationship of man and machine and free will. And, like, the ideas that have been planted and I found were unsatisfactorily developed, but they might spark someone else. Mm-hmm. Or they may like what they see here and they go see Jose Padilla's, like, rest of his filmography. And it's certainly a necessity to a studio that is running low on product. MGM, for those who don't know, went into financial meltdown. And in order to crawl their way back, they basically had to choose their strongest titles and find a way to work with them. And what did they have? They had James Bond. They had Red Dawn. They had RoboCop. And I think they had a piece of The Hobbit. I think that was part of it. They had a piece of The Hobbit. They didn't have the full thing, but that was the and that's why James Bond and Hobbit got held up in production hell for so long, is because of rights issues.
And then they had this little movie called Cabin in the Woods just sitting on the shelf.
Yeah, I don't even fucking care about that. yeah, exactly. So, but this was a studio in financial meltdown, and they need RoboCop. Now, they had to partner with Sony on it because MGM doesn't really exist anymore. But so they need it. They need a hit. Every studio needs these hits, and they ride on the problem that I feel, and where it gets confusing, is a point Mike Ryan brought up on the Huffington Post, which is, you know, you remake these films, and yet what is truly their name brand recognition? Now, if it's a superhero film, you're going to, I mean, that's just the nature of the business, and the character is so popular, you can keep doing it again and again and again. But RoboCop, how much recognition does RoboCop have to a younger audience, to the PG-13 audience they are hoping to hook? How much does the name RoboCop mean to them? And I would say, how much do you think? Do you think
the studio was hoping none. I think that's what the idea was. RoboCop is a cool sounding name. I mean, certainly when I was a kid and I was walking around Blockbuster and saw this movie called RoboCop, I was like, I need to see that right now. So when you, like, I think they were hoping to kind of hook kids who didn't really know what RoboCop was or anything, because it is a cool concept. It's really interesting. So
I feel like they're alienating a fan base that is on the internet going to actively turn against it, which again is in a sense unfair, because, you know, you're turning against a film you haven't seen. But I'll be the first to say, you know, I was looking at the market, every time I look at the marketing materials for RoboCop, and I just look at them like, why? Why are you here?
I think, and Matt, to your point about how much name recognition does RoboCop have to kids within a PG-13 audience, and I think what Adam said is right to a point, which is that I think he has very little, and I think something about this film that it was interesting to me is that I don't think MGM was using this to RoboCop because of his name recognition. I think they were using movies like Iron Man to be a greater pull to RoboCop. There's a scene in one of the first trailers for this remake where RoboCop jumps down from something and lands, and the camera moves exactly like the camera moves whenever Iron Man first appears, and he kind of jumps down and lands and raises up. He looks just like Iron Man. And I think they're hoping that for kids watching this, they probably don't know RoboCop, but they know Iron Man. They know the Avengers. And I think that is the type of audience that they were looking for with this, is to someone that's already familiar with those other characters, maybe not necessarily RoboCop.
No, that's an excellent point. I would guess for me then, you know, my mind is snapping to, again, I think you're right. There is an appeal for RoboCop based on what it looks like. But when I hear of, like, the remake of Videodrome, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah. Like, I guess the name Videodrome
is... Who is that for?
Yes, precisely.
Yeah.
And at the same time, like, on the one hand, it's like, this is again, I want to keep the open mind and be like, you know, because there have been so many films I go into and I'm like, this looks like it's going to be terrible, and it turns out to be really good. And then there are films I'm really excited for and they disappoint the hell out of me. And it's so important to keep an open mind. And yet the whole point of marketing is to steer us in a direction. So why are we, I mean, that you need to turn that into a conversation. You're trying to get me to like something based on the marketing, and I'm telling you your marketing is not eliciting the response that you want, or it is. So, for instance, Prometheus, amazing marketing campaign, final product, not as good. And we've seen that many times before.
I would say, as far as RoboCop is concerned, I don't think it's any secret that this remake wasn't made for myself or any other fans of the original, or even you know, Matt and Adam, you guys. I don't think it's not made for us. It was made for a younger audience. And for me, if I try and look at it from that standpoint, of who it was made for, if 13, 14, 15 year old kids go into this and thinking maybe Iron Man, thinking Avengers, thinking something like that, and they come away with even what little social commentary and critique and political commentary and critique this had, I actually think that's pretty good. I think the amount, the level of commentary this had, it's pretty solid, because it may be the first interaction that age has had with those types of questions, at least in a movie. And so when I look at it from that standpoint, I think the film actually does a pretty good job and stands apart from other big studio films in terms of what it has to say about society and politics in general.
And I agree with that.
Total Recall.
As opposed to Total Recall and the Earth Elevator. Yeah. Well, see, I would also...
The Earth Elevator was really important, and I think you guys are really downplaying it right now.
It was the world engine of 2011, whatever year that was.
That's not fair. That's not fair. People actually went to see Man of Steel. But I would say for... Jason, you definitely make a good point of... This it does offer something, and yet it did open soft this weekend. It was no match for the Lego Movie, which I think it's gamed at an even younger audience and has, I think, stronger ideas developed more fully than sort of what I think is an overcrowded RoboCop film.
If we want to talk about the Lego Movie, we're going to need another hour, because
we already had that hour, sir.
Yeah, exactly. I that thing was outstanding, and I'll just leave it at that.
Right. So, but again, we always seem to, because Hollywood makes so many adaptations, I think we just keep circling back to that, of these ideas and whether they work or not. And, you know, you don't want to write something off. And sometimes it's very easy to. Lego was a very easy film to write off. And it's important to remember to leave the door open, I think. And skepticism is good. I appreciate that. I respect it. I think that we should always just keep the door open. But I do think studios, depending on the projects they choose, determine how ajar that door is.
Well, even look at there was another remake that opened this weekend that did fantastic. The About Last Night remake, which got strong reviews and made $27 million opening weekend.
Yeah. Well, although, yeah, I mean, that is, and we keep overlooking those films because they're targeted towards a very specific audience.
Yeah,
that's an excellent point, though.
Yeah. An audience that, I mean, time and time again turns out, and I mean, I've heard from like crossover audiences that's a good movie, and it becomes this thing of, even, you know, going to females. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but it's like, oh wow, we didn't know females go to movies. Like, yeah.
I did not know that. I was not aware.
If you make a movie targeted to that audience, that's good. They will come, and they will come in droves.
Right.
I agree.
And that's sort of the problem with the four quadrant film, is that you try to appeal to everyone and end up appealing to no one. And I think, again, you guys are right. RoboCop was sort of aimed more at teenagers, and it's, for me, it's definitely hard, you know, putting myself back in those shoes of, like, would I have thought this film looked cool as a 13-year-old who knew nothing about RoboCop? And that's a tough question for me to answer. I'm not sure. And especially in a marketplace where there's so much more competition for my attention.
Yeah.
And movies, just the environment that we're talking about, how RoboCop couldn't come out today as it is. Well, it was also coming out in an environment where there weren't as many options, so you're allowed to take more chances. Because what else are people going to do in 1987? You're not going to turn. What the fuck are you going to do? You live in 1987. You're going to read a book? Fuck you. Go see RoboCop.
It's something that I've just thought about, and we don't have to spend much time on this, but are there any remakes of classic films that you guys were really surprised that you liked, that you thought were really well done? That, like, for me, Halloween is an all-time favorite movie of mine, and I actually liked Rob Zombie's remake, the first remake, not Halloween 2, that was horseshit, but but the first, I actually found myself really liking it, and it was something that my nostalgia for the original Halloween was so strong that I thought there's no way in hell that I'm going to enjoy this remake, and I came out surprised that I liked it. Are there any films like that for you guys that you liked it more than you expected?
I mean, I would say that, honestly, you mentioned a horror classic, and the thing is I'm not that attached to the Friday the 13th mm-hmm. series, and I think if you go back and look at the original, it's very good for what it was at the time, mm-hmm. but I think the reboot is great, and I'm surprised that it sort of withered on the vine. I think it's a really well-made film. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, I'm sort of struggling at the moment, because when I look at remakes, all I see is, like, a lot of frustration. Like, I think the Manchurian yeah. Candidate remake, which has, like, a good cast, Jonathan Demme, like, and it's just, it's utter garbage.
I think the Friday the 13th one's a great one, Matt. I think that's a really good movie as well.
I don't know how well received the original The Fly was, but Cronenberg's remake of that I think that's the epitome of what I was talking about, of just like making your own twisted thing. I think mm-hmm. that was really good. I like The Man Who Knew Too Much a lot, Alfred Hitchcock's remake of his own movie. I haven't seen his original one, but he just decided to remake it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but, I mean, I also think that studios are also kind of hedging now. They won't. It's not really a remake. It's a remake / prequel / reboot.
Yeah, like, I mean, Amazing Spider-Man is technically a remake.
It's technically a remake. Well, see, to me, like, that's the thing. I think reboot implies that there were sequels and now they have to go back, and even though RoboCop has sequels, no one fucking remembers them. Like, they do, but like, there's no RoboCop mythology.
Let's
so
be honest, reboot is just a made up word. Like, limited
oh, it's absolutely
series. Like,
it
a limited
is
series is a made up word to not use the
I would say
series.
Reboot and remake, I would give the distinction that reboot implies franchise.
Yeah.
But remake is, this was a one shot film and we are remaking it. And so, but to say, like, it's a remake / prequel, like, The Thing, that was a remake, mm-hmm. but also, like, a prequel to the original, so yeah. And to me, it's like, that's how they hook that's what they're trying to do, to hook the original viewers, because they had just done a straight Thing remake, they would have lost them, but now the people who love The Thing are reluctantly going to go in the door, being like, all right, how the fuck are you tying these two movies together? I have no faith in you doing this correctly, but you've piqued my interest.
But I can't, in good conscience, not see the movie.
It is really interesting that the horror genre lends itself to remakes well. I mean, I like Matt Reeves' Let Me In quite a bit, his remake of Let the Right One In. And I mean, a lot of the movies we talked about, I mean, The Fly, I guess, is technically a horror film. Like, it is weird that the successful remakes that you can come up with, like, off the top of your head, seem to be horror movies.
Yeah, that's an interesting good point. Thing. And I'm not sure I have an answer for why that is, but I think it's a good point.
Well, I think it's because they're more elastic. I think they're fun in a way that doesn't necessarily inspire reverence. And we expect horror to be, in terms of a franchise, sort of sci-fi, supernatural horror. So, for instance, I'm not expecting a Mist remake anytime soon. But in terms of, like, horror, it's like, oh, you can just keep reslotting them in. That's why there's, like, 11 Jason films, and then you can just kick it back to zero. And it's not that, it's not really that jarring, because you send him to hell and into outer space. And so what is really the trouble about being like,
where else can Jason go?
Where else can Jason go? I mean, and that's the thing. And I think
Jason goes to Marvel Universe. It's a superhero movie.
Make it happen. And no, but you sort of do that elasticity, and I think it works, especially because I think horror also trains people in a way that other films don't. Like, oh, there are 5 Leprechaun movies, or maybe 4, and it's just like no one cares. There's just no reverence.
Don't forget about Leprechaun.
Did I
exactly
imagine that there's a Leprechaun reboot coming?
I'm sure there is at some point.
In some stage of development. I feel like the last time I wrote about it was like 2 years ago.
Right.
I'd love
and there's
Jennifer
some
Aniston to reprise her role in that.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, but there are some films that are just like, yeah. And there are some films that
remakes too, like 3:10.
Western does.
True Grit.
Yeah.
That used to be like the go-to. Like Westerns were just remade a long time ago. They just made them again. Just like there's like 3 different stagecoaches.
Oh yeah. And you could also remake, you know, noirs. Like they're like, there's like a version of the Maltese Falcon before the classic one. Like, you know, again, so this isn't, remakes aren't anything new, and some are still being held sacrosanct, like Gremlins. Like there's always that word leaking out, like, ooh, Gremlins might be coming. They might remake Gremlins, and Steven Spielberg's like, no. No, it's not going to happen. So
I'm interested to see like 20, probably earlier than 20 years from now, but movies that we've like been a part of, like I guess something like Independence Day, that was like a, you know, like a big event, like we were all around when it came out and it was a big thing, and like there'll probably be a remake down the line just because that's a property and that's easy to,
I mean, they're doing the sequel, and I just like, you know, which that's like the aliens were prepared, but they weren't prepared for Mac OS 10 Leopard.
Well, I'm just talking about like an original film that like we were around to like be here for the opening of.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's we're part of that generation.
I think to that too. I think 30 years from now we'll be seeing a Men in Black reboot of some sort, maybe sooner than that.
Definitely. There's like a I think Sony's doing a reboot now because it became just like cost prohibitive to keep Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones in those movies. Because they're having to, there's like $40 million of your budget is gone once you cast your 2 lead actors.
You know, it's also cost prohibitive starting to shoot a film when you're not done with the script yet.
That's true.
No, but I mean, you're right. Like Men in Black, like that's the other thing. If the concept is still sound, then it still works to reboot it. Like, and so even if you reboot Men in Black, you don't necessarily need an Agent J and an Agent K. And, you know, Men in Black, I believe, has its origins in comics anyway. So it was already an adaptation. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of thing. And I think the more the origins of a thing help ease the transition. Like, I'm not going to be super bummed if they reboot Men in Black. And I think maybe with RoboCop, the consternation came from, it was like, it was such a bold original film, and you know it's going to be tempered for a certain audience, and that boldness is going to fade away.
Yeah, I agree. I never really understand or agree with people that even agree with me on how much they love the original RoboCop, and then in turn become very upset with people liking the remake. I can't get that. I can't get behind that. And unless someone tries to position that the remake is better than the original in this case, in which case I will fight them to the death. However, if it's just I like the remake, I don't get the being angry and calling people out and telling them, oh no, you're wrong, the original is better. If someone likes it and it's plays to their sensibilities, then let them like it. I don't think the RoboCop remake does anything to take away from the original.
No, absolutely not. I think if it's a little frustrating though, because you see films, there are all these middling, mediocre films that have hopeful premises that you could redo. Like Ocean's 11 is like the key example of like, if you're going to remake something, remake Ocean's 11. Mm-hmm. And there are those like kind of middling films, and even then they can't really let it go. Like Tron Legacy, it's not enough. You can't, like, it is basically, it could have just been a remake, but no it has to be a sequel / reboot. We have to see what, you know, Flynn is up to. Don't care.
Nobody cares.
And that's the thing, but like Tron actually is that level of material, because really the only thing people remember about Tron is it's how for its special effects at the time. As a story, Tron is okay. It's not like, for me, I don't think it's a classic film. And I would have been amenable to just a straight up remake. But, you know, that's the whole thing. A studio's like, no. We have to make it important, so it now has to be part of a franchise. Like, this just can't be a remake. It has to be a bigger deal than it actually is.
You can't just
and they
make
spent
a movie anymore. You have to make a franchise.
Yeah. Although, I mean, even that film, they were so tepid on it. I mean, that film basically started out as a demo reel that they showed at Comic-Con to get to as a test balloon. So it wasn't like they were full throttle, but once they decided to do it, they really stepped on the gas and it crashed into a wall. But Tron 3 will happen someday, I'm sure.
You think the
Tron Legacy sure
Punk
is
back?
Pretty.
What?
You think they'll be able to get Daft Punk back for the soundtrack, or are they too big for Tron 3?
That would be
they're too A-list.
Too popular. Exactly. Can't do it. Gotta get M83.
Yeah. Some up and comer, maybe like.
Which is fine. I like M83. I think the Oblivion soundtrack is great. Sure, yeah. There, that's a film. That's a film you should remake in 20 years. Oblivion.
Yeah.
Oblivion has a sound idea.
Well,
I don't
Oblivion's
think it's
already kind of a remake of.
It's kind of a remake already, but you can
discussed.
Do it better. You can. It's a remake of. But the thing is it's like it's a remake of ideas.
Sure.
That's kind of cobbled together and could be put together better. Like, it's a kind of a sci-fi hodgepodge, whereas I think just as RoboCop is sort of a sci-fi hodgepodge in the sense of its commentary. So I think Oblivion, you could, like, streamline it and, you know, polish it and give it a better go-around. So I would, if you told me in 20 years, like, someone's, like, remaking Oblivion, I'm like, I'd give that a shot.
You'd buy that for a dollar?
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Apologies.
No apology. I think that's a good note to transition to recommendations, unless you guys have anything else to add.
No, I'm good.
All right. So, Jason, what do you got for us this week?
This week, in keeping with our theme of science fiction, policemen, I'm going with 1994's Time Cop. Jean-Claude Van Damme, classic. Basically, I think everyone's probably familiar with Time Cop. Have you guys seen Time Cop?
I have seen Time Cop.
Okay. I have not seen Time Cop.
Well, it's available on Amazon Instant Video. It's not a Netflix Instant Stream, but it is on Amazon Prime.
Nice.
Basically, Time Cop, 1994, sci-fi action cop film, directed by Peter Hyams, who did, I think, End of Days with Schwarzenegger. He also did Sudden Death with Van Damme the year after Time Cop. And... the premise of the movie is basically Jean-Claude Van Damme kicks a lot of ass in different timelines. That's the general take. That's the biggest takeaway I have, at least. But for the sake of this, the logline is an officer for a security agency that regulates time travel must fend for his life against a shady politician who has a tie to his past. And so the film just kind of bounces around between timelines, between 1994 and 2004. And it essentially is Jean-Claude Van Damme trying to stop someone who is leveraging time travel to become rich, and so that they can use that money towards a presidential campaign. And so they're basically trying to buy the presidency. Jean-Claude Van Damme is having none of it, and so he's floating between 94 and 2004 trying to stop it. And somewhere along the way also his wife gets killed, and so the whole time he's kind of trying to stop this whole presidency thing from going down, but he's also trying to maybe go back and save his wife. And so that's my recommendation for the week, if for no other reason than this classic scene of Time Cop where he dodges being tased by doing splits on his kitchen bar, and it's pretty awesome.
So what you're trying to say is Time Cop is layered.
There's a lot going on in Time Cop. Predominantly revolves around kicking.
As most of Van Damme's films do. Okay, Time Cop. Adam, what do you got for us?
I'm recommending a movie that is very loosely tied to what we were talking to today, but I guess it kind of has to do with body transference. It is Carl Reiner's 1983 comedy, The Man with Two Brains. This is a very strange movie, but it's Steve Martin and Carl Reiner teamed up again after The Jerk to make this, and it kind of takes their screwball sense of humor even further. It's kind of an underseen movie. People don't really talk about it much, but I really like it. Steve Martin plays a brain surgeon named Dr. Michael Herferer, His last name is spelled H-F-U-H-R-U-H-U-R-R. And he is renowned for, he invented a method of brain surgery called cranial screw top brain surgery. And after he saves the life of a woman who he accidentally runs over, they fall in love. A woman is played by Kathleen Turner. And she's kind of a femme fatale. Her name is Dolores Benedict. All the names are ridiculous and they have to do with the plot. After they get married, she basically reveals herself to be a terrible person. She won't have sex with him because she says she's too sick. And so on their honeymoon in Vienna, Steve Martin's character meets a mad scientist called Dr. Alfred Necessiter, who's created this technique to allow brains to live in jars. So the brains are still alive in these liquid-filled jars. And Steve Martin's character discovers that he can telepathically communicate with one of the brains. Her name is Anne Ulmelmehe, voiced by Sissy Spacek. And they fall in love. And the rest of the movie is Steve Martin trying to find a body to place this brain in. So he's trying to find someone to kill that he can put the brain into. And there's a scene where he's like, you know, the typical love scene where they're like on a rowboat, but it's like him and this just jar of brain with a sun hat on it. And at one point the scientist tells him that he should just put the brain into a gorilla, and he sits there and he thinks about it for a second and he goes, "I couldn't fuck a gorilla." And it's just it's really ridiculous. There's a serial killer on the loose named the Elevator Killer. It's really goofy. It came out a couple years after The Jerk, so it's kind of that same sense of humor as Steve Martin and Carl Reiner again. But it's really silly and really funny. So I highly suggest finding it. I'm not sure where it's available right now, but if you happen to come across it, definitely check it out.
Okay, The Man with Two Brains. My recommendation will be Paul Verhoeven's 2006 film Black Book, which the thing you have to know about Paul Verhoeven is that he's always going to go big, and even his failures are spectacular and memorable, such as Showgirls. And I mean, he did Starship Troopers. Like, he is a thoughtful guy, and I think
Hollow
Showgirls,
Man, leaving out Hollow Man. Very
well, talk about remakes that shouldn't be done. But for Black Book, this really works, and it's actually, I feel, it's his most serious film in terms of the material, and yet there is his sort of weirdness poking through. The film is very serious, though, in terms of its plot. You have Carice Van Houten, who is currently on Game of Thrones playing Melisandre. In this film, she plays a Jewish woman in the Netherlands whose family is killed during World War II by the Nazis. And so she then decides to go undercover as part of the resistance. She dyes her hair blonde, becomes with this resistance group to try to infiltrate the Nazis. And it's just this great undercover thriller that happens to be in World War II. It's a kind of look at this World War II genre that you have never really seen before, and it's intense. Her performance is great, and yet that Verhoeven touch is right there, where it's like you'll have a scene with her like dyeing her pubic hair blonde to really sell the Aryan angle.
Classic.
And it's that kind of stuff. It's like, wow, Paul, that's a real attention to detail. I don't think any audience member was sitting there. It's like, but what about her pubes? How will she fool them? Like, that was the big question weighing on the audience's mind. And oddly enough, it doesn't take me out of the film. It's like, that's how good he is. He's like, with other directors, it just like snap you out of it. But it's like, oh man, I'm just really engrossed. And even though this is a weird fucking moment that I can't ignore, I'm not just like, the illusion isn't shattered for me, because he just knows how to handle his tone so well. And you can look to Showgirls. Showgirls is trash through and through, but it's consistent trash. It is. It's kind of an amazing film. Showgirls is like if I handed you a deck of cards and like I was going to guess, like I would have to, you know, telepathically guess to pick out all the black ones, and I chose all the red ones. Like, I was consistently wrong all the time in a kind of an amazing way. So Showgirls is fine for trash, but I would say for a legitimately great film, seek out Black Book.
I'd just like to point out that Time Cop has way more kicking than either of those two. And that's all I'll say.
Have you seen Black Book? Do you know for a fact?
You know what? I'm going out on a limb there. I haven't seen Black Book, but there's a hell of a lot of kicking in Time Cop.
There's really no film. You Jean-Claude Van Damme film versus anything, more kicking in the Van Damme film. So thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks, Jason, for joining us. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwood.
And Jason?
At Collider Jason.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.